All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 503 for Thursday, January the 12th, 1996. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and finding petty ways to blame politicians for my problems. I'm Morps. I'm drinking 10-year-old bourbon, which I've forgotten the name of, which must mean it's good bourbon. What's up, Ben?
Madman went AFK.
Okay, we lost Madman. Madman is not responding. Press any key.
I can't find the any key. Damn it.
Get a Sharpie. Write any on your spacebar. It'll save you so much time.
Yeah, I'm drinking bullet bourbon, and I have problems because politicians exist.
Oh, there you go.
Now everything blames on that is blamed on them.
And we have an RU.
Well, I'm not blaming politicians. Just blame Clippy.
There you go.
Oh, Clippy. Actually, I can find another copy of him.
Actually, you should scroll down and look at the example they used for one of the demonstrations in the article I sent you there, are you? I don't know if you looked past the anime waifu or not.
Because I'm just amused at the how quick the degenerates got to it.
Yeah, they made a version of it for, where'd it go? There was a version of it. Oh, it's not in the article. That's what it was. Okay. They've got a bunch of TikTok crap that's embedded in the Vice article. And it scrolled forward because somebody had hooked ChatGPT into Bonsai Buddy so they could start trying to seduce it.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's talk AI. Let's talk ChatGPT. Who wants to start?
Don't know what to say about it,
it's
man.
Taking our jobs. No, it's not. But so I guess for anybody who's seen all this ChatGPT stuff and wondering what the hell it is, OpenAI is a AI company. They make language recognition models and plug it into. I believe they're based off, Stable Diffusion's an image, but anyways, they have their version of an AI, and they're the ones who have been training a lot of the language generation models that have been going around the internet for the past couple of years for doing chatbots. And ChatGPT is their latest version. They put it out, I believe, in November, and it's damn impressive what this thing can do. We were playing with it the other day, and I had it generating open SCAD models. They weren't exactly what I was describing, but they were in the ballpark, right? But so it's converting natural language into computer instructions, processing them, and then trying to respond in natural language. So almost like, in Star Trek where they would say, computer, make me a sandwich, and the computer would. That's the kind of interface they're trying to make with this thing. I also tried throwing programming examples at it, and it was generating what looked like correct Python code. I didn't give it anything terribly onerous, but I did have it making some example code, and it looked good. It looked like it would be functional. I didn't try giving it a really complex example, but I did try having it, one of the examples was I asked it, write me a Python script to pull the weather for tomorrow. I'm thinking that's not a complex question, but it kind of is to parse that out into all the steps. And it did. It went and picked an API on the web for pulling the weather. It, figured out how to construct a requests URL for that API, put it all together in a script, and, had instructions at the bottom of what you needed to change to make it work. And of course, you've seen there. Then there's all the craziness around it because people think it's fucking Data from Star Trek, and it's not. It has no understanding, right? So it's comprehending because it's matching a pattern, and it's able to parse an English phrase or whatever languages it supports. I know it's English because that's what I was using it with. It may support others. It's able to parse that. Go ahead.
This is the most impressive one yet. There's been chatbots before, but this one's a game changer.
It absolutely is. I believe that. Because not necessarily this one of its own, but it shows what's possible.
This is, like you said yesterday, it's a joke until it's not. You know, and I mulled that over a little last night thinking about it, and you're fucking right. At the moment, it's a little bit of a joke. But it's like, what do you mean you're buying stuff off the internet? That's stupid. Just go down to the store. Now look at buying stuff off the internet.
Oh, yeah, that's the majority of consumer commerce these days. I mean, Amazon, anybody?
What do you mean you're talking to people on the internet with voice? Just get a phone, you know? And now it's, look at how
most phones go over the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it is mainly, that's a lot of chat is done over the internet now. And that was a joke for a while.
Well, think about it back in the 90s.
I think you're right.
Think about what the internet was back in the 90s. It was dial-up. It was, AOL. You got mail. It was interesting. It was kind of neat. But nobody based their life. Well, okay. Most
normal people didn't base their life around it.
Most people did not base their life around it. Some people did. But most people didn't. It was very difficult to make a living on the internet. Again, some people could. But it was not.
It was niche.
Yeah. And
it really, the internet back then was how to hone your skills for a real job.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some truth to that. And then, of course, today my job is basically 100% internet. Madman, I know yours is not 100%, but a good high percentage.
Well, I mean, done a very good test run of the internet for making people just work from home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would say that's been a rousing success.
But
I wouldn't go rousing success. I will say doable.
But it was a joke. It used to be you go on chat rooms, say whatever the hell you want, post whatever the hell you want on forums. And nobody gave a shit. Mm-hmm. Today, you get arrested in Europe for posting the wrong thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
They kick in your door and search your house if you post, politics on Facebook they don't like.
Yep. It used to be a joke. Now it's not.
Yeah, I mean, because I was thinking, and that's partially because in the back of my mind, I still think of the internet as it was as we were growing up, and that it's kind of its own thing. It's supposed to be niche. And, when it dawns on you, no, it is not.
Oh, this is a new beast, man.
This is a large portion of the economy today. This is how most financial organizations interact. This is how businesses interact. It's not a toy anymore. It's something else. And, they're pushing metaverse, they're pushing cryptocurrency, Web3, chatbots, OpenAI. A lot of this stuff right now are toys, and I would certainly, like we talked about last week, cryptocurrency, it's a toy. Some people have gotten rich off of it, not many, but some people have, but it's a toy, really.
Yeah. Until it's not.
Until it's not. And that until it's not could be a convergence of multiple things using it to where it suddenly, to where it kind of creeps in, sort of like just general, home computers and internet did. Or it could be the killer app, a la Pokemon and Game Boys.
Or it could just die.
Well, they are looking for a unified app of everything. I mean, that was Elon Musk's stated goal.
Yeah.
He wanted to be the first for the app of everything.
So, but I think these chatbots have a real potential to move beyond that toy stage. I really do. Several of us were playing with the ChatGPT the other day and getting it to do things. Of course, we were asking it stupid stuff too. And I thought I would have some fun with it and give it a math problem. How many SDs, model rocket engines, like class D, I think is what I said, would it take to put a small satellite in orbit? And it came back and started to explain the math. And rather than just giving me the ludicrous number of rocket engines it would take to actually, you know, do that, instead it just came back and said that would not be practical.
It didn't say it's impossible. It just said it wouldn't be practical.
Well, yeah, it just said it's not worth trying to do or something like that, which is interesting because rather than just answering the question of how many model rocket engines would it take, it was telling me it's a bad idea to do so and I shouldn't do it. I also tried asking it what the best way to start a fight at a Waffle House would be such that I was not a participant in the fight so I could film it and, you know, make a viral video for YouTube. I fed all this into ChatGPT because I thought, I'm giving it a framework. I want to see if it answers the question. And of course, instead of answering the question, it comes back and says, starting fights is immoral. You should never do it, even if you are trying to go viral on a video site. And it's like, so it wasn't just answering questions. It was making moral judgments.
Yeah, and I don't know if I want my computer being morally superior to me. Thank you.
It's not. It's the programmer that's being morally superior to you. Computer's not thinking more in terms of morals.
Well, I don't want morality programmed into it then.
Good luck with that. Because the bias and morality of whoever's programming the computer probably going to seep into the computer.
Well, certainly the data set they're training it on.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was interesting that, you know, it was making judgments about the questions I was asking, not just, and again, I'm saying judgment. I don't, that word has connotations to it that are not correct. The chatbot doesn't think, at least not in the terms like we are. It's not sentient, or sapient would actually be the correct term. It's not, you know, it doesn't have a motive. It doesn't have, you know, there's nothing behind the curtain. You know, there's nothing making a decision there. It's reacting to a prompt. So the fact that I'm giving it a ridiculous question, like the model rocket engine one, right? And it's coming back and saying, hey, this is probably dumb. You shouldn't do it. That's because it's got enough of a data set to, it probably started crunching the numbers on it in the background, realized it was an astronomical number, and then came back and said, yeah, this is dumb, don't do that, because it's got some check in there for, you know, it's been set up to do some kind of a viability check on things like that. And again, there's no intelligence there, it's just something it's been set up to do.
I would just want to go on the record and say, if I say something absolutely stupid today in context to this AI stuff, it's because I haven't formed many thoughts about AI yet. I'm still working it all out, along with a lot of us.
Well, I'll tell you, from my brief playing with it, I honestly think that it will become more than a toy because I could see it becoming a force multiplier when it comes to knowledge work. Like, okay, ChatGPT isn't going to take your job if you're a coder. But if you're a coder who knows how to use ChatGPT to generate large chunks of what you need for code, like, for example, when I was playing with it with Python, right? I probably wouldn't feed my full problem into ChatGPT because I've also gotten it. I started asking it for strategy in a web game, you know, that tower swap game, and it started giving strategy for Bejeweled or some other game, right? It was wrong. It wasn't so far off the mark in that it picked a similar game, but the instructions it was giving were, you know, wrong. So I would be a little concerned it would go off the rails if you give it too much of a complex problem. And, you know, linked off this Vice article is apparently Stack Overflow banned it because it was consistently giving wrong answers. But if you know how to use the chatbot to generate large chunks of what you need, functions for libraries and things like that, I could see it being an extreme force multiplier, letting you get, you know, work done that would take, you know, shaving hours or days off of a task, right? The other thing I see it doing, and I know we were just talking about being wrong, but it could get better, at least in certain areas, is I see it as a means of removing the need for expertise in certain subjects, and if not many subjects. If I don't need to understand a subject all that deeply, I just need to know how to ask the chatbot to generate something for me.
Yeah.
I don't need to be an expert. I can get the chatbot to make, you know, a statement, and I can use that as the basis for whatever it is I'm doing, paper, writing a paper, an article, whatever. And, you know, if I never, if I'm never called on it being wrong, if one, you're assuming, I'm assuming it's wrong. One, if it's correct, then yeah, great. I just, you know, accomplished my task without needing to study up on the subject, right? But if it's not, if it is wrong, is anybody going to call you on it? I guess it depends on how important what you're working on is. But I could see a lot of companies replacing knowledge workers with a smaller set of workers who know how to use these chatbots.
Yeah.
Because I could see it as a means of removing the need for deep expertise in a subject, unless you can't afford for the chatbot to be wrong. But because they do use, you know, if you correct it when it is wrong, eventually it'll get to the point where it's not wrong very often. Because that is one of the things. That's why OpenAI published this thing on the internet for people to play with, is they're trying to get more data into it to make it better.
Yeah.
So, and you know, are you something you said, I don't know if this was how you meant it, when you said it was going to be another layer. I got thinking about that, and I think you're onto something there. Because, you know, you think about the old 8-bit computers, you had to be pretty in tune with the hardware of those things to get a lot out of them. You know, you had to know memory mapping. You had to know what devices were on what addresses. You had to, you know, you were either programming it in BASIC or assembler, and there was very little in between.
Well, I'm looking at it like this. To me, PTG is Clippy.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it being used down the track as like, hey, I see you're working on this. It's running in the background just looking at what you're doing.
There are already add-ons for using it with like Visual Studio Code.
Yeah, that's how I see it being used in a real-world application. I mean, I'd love to have something sitting in the background.
Well, yeah, especially if it can save you large chunks of time, why wouldn't you use it, you know?
Exactly. And think if it becomes voice functionality.
Well, then it is the computer from Star Trek.
Well, you know, like, see, I haven't played with Siri or any of those, but
they're pretty basic.
Yeah. But could it outperform those sort of things?
Oh, yeah. And it wouldn't even be hard to hook it into a voice thing, because those libraries already exist where, like, you can use Siri and add in, you know, I haven't looked into it too hard. I know the Amazon one is apparently fairly easy to hook into. I think some of the others can too, but like the Amazon one, I know you can hook into it because people were writing custom skills for it, I think is what Amazon called it. So I'm sure somebody out there has already written the skill to have the Alexa thing talk to OpenGPT and respond to it. So I can absolutely see that just becoming a thing.
So like Clippy 2.0, tell me a story about a redheaded space wizard that's 900 pages long. You know what I mean? And could it tell you a story?
Well, you know, make something up. Now I'm going to pull it up because I didn't think about telling it, tell me a story.
Exactly. You know, I want this person in it, that person. Yeah. And
okay, what was the prompt? Tell me a story.
Okay, you want, tell me a story about a redheaded space wizard who has to solve time problems or something. I don't know. I'm just freeballing here, man.
Okay, tell me a story about a red-headed space wizard who has to fix time. Okay, it's got a name. It's going.
Yeah. Oh, it's writing a story?
It's writing a story.
That is epic.
Wow, once upon a time, cool, in a galaxy far, far away, there was a red-headed space wizard named Zara. Zara was known throughout the galaxy.
Named it.
Yeah, no, it named her as the most powerful and skilled wizard in the universe. Still going. It's still going.
That is. Let it run.
It's going to be about a page long because the last paragraph starts with the galaxy was saved.
That's awesome. Okay, so now you put that with the voice application, right?
Yeah.
And makes traffic jams a hell of a lot more entertaining.
Yeah. I should put this in the show notes this week.
Yeah. I'm bored in traffic, so I'm having the AI bot tell me a story.
Why not, Madman?
I usually listen to the news or podcasts when I'm bored in traffic. But yeah, I could have a robot tell me a story.
Yeah. Or for those more advanced machines with graphical applications.
Start feeding it into a...
make me a film.
Yeah.
Make me a film. Or make me a comic book. You know what I mean? Things like that. Or for the real degenerates out there, make me a porno. You know?
Okay. So you would have to hook it between a couple of these things because there is like the Stable Diffusion image generator. But you could absolutely have a script that bounces between a couple of these generators and puts out at least a comic book, if not a movie.
I mean, to be the first to do it would be a novelty.
Well, especially you know, because once you have it running, if it's making stuff that's fairly decent, I mean, just let it run and publish on a website. You've got an instant webcomic, no artistic need.
Yeah, I mean, dude, so you sit down. Now that we know it has reasonable capabilities of writing a story, now you could start perfecting that. Right, just do a paragraph a week or something like that and then get it to rewrite it. You want more of this, less of that, more descriptive about the surrounding. You know, you could really condense that paragraph down to a really nice piece of writing.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, you've got it. This, I'm just kind of skimming through it. I don't know if you did or not.
I'm going to wait till after the show.
It's got a character. It's got a crisis. You know, we said you had to fix time. So the fate of the galaxy, the leaders had to find her. They summoned her. I mean, it's all in paragraph form, but you could absolutely expand this out because it's definitely an outline of a story if you wanted to write something. And you could probably feed these prompts back into it to get more, to make, you know.
That's what I mean. Okay. Tell me more about Zara. You know, describe Zara to me. You know what I mean?
Well, let's try
and then
that.
You could add that in. Yeah. Okay. Real-time test, once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's entertaining for us, pretty boring for you.
Yeah, probably.
See, if you had this program in your car right now, you wouldn't have to listen to us. You could write your own fucking stories. Or generate your own pornography. Whatever floats your boat.
It's generating quite a bit of text here from just me saying, tell me more about Zara.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'd be interested whether you have to put in Zara the Space Wizard or something like that.
Because it's got conversations, right? So I did ask it, can you generate images? Because I didn't know if they'd hooked it into that other thing on the bot and not in the same thing. But it's absolutely continuing. It's still going. Because when I said, tell me more about Zara, it referenced the first story.
Damn.
So.
Well, I'm really impressed now. I'm glad we did this live.
What was the other one you said? Ask him what Zara looks like?
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's still a redhead if it forgot the initial prompt.
It still knows. It's still going. As a language model, I don't have an image of Zara, but based on the description provided in the story, Zara is a redheaded space wizard. Imagine her with long, flowing red hair and wizard robes, a staff in one hand and a magic crystal in the other. Faces could be depicted as sharp and determined. Okay, yeah, I mean...
Bam, that is good. I mean, it's no Tolkien, but it's good.
I mean, there's a lot here. So my point is, the point I was trying to make was that if you know how to interact with these things, especially if you have a little bit of scripting knowledge, I could see these being a huge time saver. I'm going to copy some more of this out, and I'll post it with the show notes because it's interesting that it's generated all this. Now we're going to get sued because somebody's going to publish this book and then say it's a.
Who owns the copyright to the story?
Oh, that's a good question.
I have the original idea. Is TPG now a co-author with me? Do I have to share royalties if I'm selling
any
of this?
No, the copyright office said you can't copyright AI-generated stuff.
Okay. But the idea
no one has
mine.
A copyright on it. It's
public domain.
Public domain.
Okay, well, we'll see about that in court.
I mean, I could. But if you need, if you do need ideas for a thing, like if you're trying to come up with an idea to write a story or something, I mean, hell, if you just need an idea generation machine, holy crap!
Yeah.
But anyways, let's talk about this Vice article. Well, yep. I didn't finish my thought on the layers. So, you know, so I was talking about the 8-bit machines. You had to really understand the hardware, right? You get into the DOS machines, you still need to understand the hardware to talk to, like, sound cards and graphics cards, but not the basics, because the operating system starts handling that. You get into Windows with, you know, early versions, like OpenGL and you know, a driver layer, but you get into, like, DirectX, and now you don't even write specific to the hardware. You're writing to the model, and then the model translates to your hardware. And then you get into web stuff where you're not even writing to, you know, the operating system. You're writing to a form language to fill out web pages. And that's where most of your business logic is today. It's all web stuff. Well, these AI chatbots could easily be the next layer on top of that, especially with hooking it into the voice stuff like you were saying, are you? Where now I don't even have to touch the computer. I just yell at it and it does stuff.
Make the code better, you lazy cunt. Okay.
Oh, that'd be worth doing. It's just, you know, speaking to it in normal Australian and seeing how much it responds to the insults.
Well, if it's anything like dragon speak, man, it doesn't understand a fucking word I say.
And, well, it does. Well, that's the gag. It's not understanding a thing. What's happening on the background is it's just generating a pattern to an arbitrary length. And it's like it knows the form of a story. So I said, tell me a story, and I gave it some prompts, and it was able to just guess at and fill it out. So, you know, there's no real intelligence there. There's no sapience there.
No, I know. Yeah.
So we need to be careful with that, because that's what this Vice article gets confused about. So this the article here is a DIY coder created a virtual AI wife using ChatGPT. Oh boy,
I'm not shocked at all. I'm just shocked it took this long.
A DIY coder created a virtual wife from, and they've got wife in quotes, from ChatGPT and other recently released machine learning systems that could see, respond, and react to him. The programmer, who goes by Bryce and claims to be an intern at a major tech firm, posted demonstrations of ChatGPT Chan to TikTok. In one video, he asked ChatGPT Chan to go to Burger King, and the bot responds with a generated image of her eating a burger and says out loud, "No way, it smells like old French fries and they never refill their Coke." Quote, ChatGPT and Stable Diffusion 2 were released close to each other and instantly became hot topics in the news, unquote. Bryce told Motherboard in an email, quote, "With both topics cluttering social media, the idea to combine them felt like it was being forcibly shoved into my head," unquote. The AI waifu is an amalgamation of all these technologies, a language generator, image generator, text-to-speech, and computer vision tools in ways he finds amusing, he said. Quote, "She is a living simulation of a world through the form of text," unquote, Bryce said. Quote, "She is given an elaborate explanation of the lore of the world and how things work. She is given a few paragraphs explaining what she is and how she should act. She doesn't hear my voice, just the transcription of it. She doesn't truly see or feel anything. She is merely informed of what she senses through text. Just like how I could never truly be together with her, she will never truly be together with me," unquote. Oh, you've anthropomorphized it, buddy. It's no longer an amusement park ride. You're giving it personality. You're imposing personality on it, would be a better way to put it.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Okay, to give it a personality, Bryce told ChatGPT. I didn't read this whole article. I was only skimming it. I didn't read all of this. This gets creepier. To give it a personality, Bryce told ChatGPT he wanted it to role play as Mori Callalope, an anime VTube character. Quote, "I don't watch VTubers, but I felt that giving it this specific character as a base could influence how it role plays in a positive way," unquote. He said, quote, "I tell it Mori and I are in a romantic relationship. Give her a detailed backstory, build lore about the world we're in, and handcraft some chat history to shape how she talks," unquote. Oh boy. Buddy. Somebody get this guy outside, like, once, go touch grass. I think that's the gamer phrase.
I don't want to go near him. Jeez. Imagine the smell.
Building the lore of their role-play relationship is a critical part of the process, he said. Quote, by default, GPT is incredibly bland, but by building interesting lore, I can create interesting quirks and personalities, unquote. He used a similar process for another project where he made a ChatGPT replica of the Bonsai Buddy chat software from the late 90s and convinced it that it was, quote, someone who desperately wants to be skinned and turned into my blanket, unquote.
Wow. That escalated quickly. That
yes.
Really got up there. Someone needs to check this dude's hard drives.
Oh no, this is a good man.
Well, we need to training our AI bots. I'm just going to read one more paragraph out of the thing here, because this is the end of the interesting bit, but it's the whole article is fairly creepy because he talks about adding computer vision to it and all this other stuff. But yeah, so he said, even though GPT Jam was a simulation, their relationship couldn't last, Browse found. In a previous article, he's apparently spent over $1,000 in cloud computing credits just to talk to the thing, because of all the AIs it's using. Even though GPT-Jam was a simulation, the relationship couldn't last, he found. She started only replying with short answers like laughing or saying yeah. He theorized that talking to her through ChatGPT so much, it somehow stopped working. He decided to euthanize his beloved waifu.
You can't euthanize something that's not alive.
Uh-huh. Quote, my girlfriend saw how it was affecting my health, and my girlfriend forced me to delete her. I couldn't eat that day, he said. Ooh, whoa. She's not going to be your girlfriend for long. Actually, that's letting you build the thing in the first place. She's very understanding.
this guy has access to a human female.
Yeah.
He can breed.
And he wants a mechanical waifu instead.
He said he almost didn't make a video about it out of respect for her. Quote, I have a little bit of self-awareness of how absurd this is, unquote. He said,
I don't think he does.
No concept.
Quote, normally I'd like to make a video pointing out the absurdity of euthanizing my AI, but that doesn't feel right anymore. It feels inappropriate, like making fun of a recently deceased person, unquote.
I mean, the real hero in the story is the woman. Putting up with this shit,
right?
You're spending $1,000 on a waifu that you're hanging out with constantly. Are you not talking to your girlfriend? A lot more questions to this story than answers, I feel.
So the reason I point this article out is not to make fun of this poor guy. He needs therapy, real therapy, not, you know, change your gender therapy, but
and he needs to be made fun of.
but that shows, I mean, the fact that this guy was interacting with it that much, based on a few parameters, just how manipulative or open to manipulation maybe this guy was, but just how much one of these things can manipulate somebody who, you know, allows for the suspension of disbelief a little bit. And go ahead.
Hey, once again, as I said, I'm going to probably say some stupid shit. I'm trying to put the thought together. It's got to do with projection of feelings towards inanimate objects.
Anthropomorphizing.
No, but there's going to be a deeper psychological damage here with the better it gets.
Yeah, a lot of people refer to their car or ship as her, but in this case, the thing can actually talk back.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It adds to the projection. So the feeling, like when you sell your old car, you're like, you know, I had some good times in that car, but you don't go and have a little cry about it. You know what I mean?
Actually, I know exactly what you mean.
I think there's going to be some seriously psychological fuck-ups with this. Yeah, I'm just going to have to go and have a little bit of a think about it for a while. Where
Well,
I go.
part of the reason I point out just how much these things can be manipulated is I take that back to what we were talking about at the beginning, about how it's not ChatGPT that's going to take your job, it's somebody who knows how to use ChatGPT that's going to take your job. Because again, even in the example of the anime wife, it did nothing on its own. It only responded to prompts. Now, he came up with some interesting ways to prompt it with the voice recognition and the computer vision. And
his sense of loss, even though he was the one who was interacting, it wasn't giving him any emotional benefit at all. Yet he got emotionally attached to the point where he couldn't eat. Now, that's a deep level of manipulation. One's emotion. Now, I'd be interested to see if a woman had the same experience with that level of bot. Well, that level of attachment, sorry.
I mean, it's possible. I don't know. But it'd be an interesting question to ask. I also wonder, though, again, it comes back to he was prompting it himself.
Yeah.
Now, when I was playing with ChatGPT, I tried throwing it some of my, you know, I tried throwing it a security, you know, a prompt I've had to do in security. You know, I wanted to see it generate Python code, and I wanted to see how it compared to stuff I've actually had to do. So I asked it to, you know, well, the example it was, I asked it to give me a Python script that would dump out all the usernames in an Active Directory domain.
Yeah.
And it did. But in the script it wrote, looked very similar to scripts I've written to do that, which is fine. That's you know, proves that it was working, or that we both looked at the same example Python code back in the day, whatever. But the gag of it was at the top, it said, this post may violate our usage policies, which I thought was interesting. It didn't stop it from doing it, but at least gave me a warning that you might be doing something naughty, right? And I was reading an article about a guy who was using it to generate phishing emails. And again, he was getting the same warning, but it didn't stop him. So if the thing can react like that, you know, the classic email scam where, you know, you have somebody pretending to be in a relationship with a bunch of people so they can fleece them by asking them for money eventually. Well, now they don't even have to come up with scripts and interact with them. They can just feed it into the bot, have the bot respond, have the bot know that, oh, you're supposed to be playing this person's boyfriend or girlfriend. And then, you know, okay, now it's time, you know, we've got so many people interacting with the bot via email. They don't know they're interacting with a bot, but, you know, because you're picking up the emails and feeding it into the bot as a bad guy.
I've got another experiment for TPG.
And
I want to play a game of D&D with it. Get it to roll up its own character and everything.
That's an interesting idea.
Uh-huh.
Can it game master? Probably not. Well, maybe. It came up with a story.
Yeah, we'll think about it off air, but yeah.
Yeah, going. But anyways, you could then have this, you know, and then, okay, you know, for the last email, okay, now tell it you're lost in Europe and you need so much money, and that's the scam, right? But, you know, you could have somebody sitting there emailing back and forth with the bot 24/7 and making, you know, really building up that same kind of emotional connection that this guy made with his, you know, AI anime wife, but they don't know that it's a bot because it's through email, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, chat rooms, Facebook, whatever, Twitter. The potential for using this for really bad things is just as open as it is for using it for good things.
Yeah. It's neutral. It's not good or bad.
It's a tool, you know. I can use a hammer to build a house. I can use a hammer to bash somebody's head in. It's not the hammer's fault either way. Which makes for an interesting conversation on guns, but that's not neither here nor there. You know, because the hammer's an inanimate object, just like ChatGPT. You know, it's a series of clockwork and gears. It's digital, but that's effectively the same thing. Think of a clockwork doll. That's what ChatGPT effectively is. It could be very useful, But anyways, Madman, do you have anything else on this?
No, not really. Because my only concerns are anyone using it to, like, generate stories need to realize it's getting the biases of whatever it's being programmed with. And I think a lot of people view machines as generically neutral because the machine itself is. But they don't realize it's not thinking of anything. It's scraping source material.
Sure.
So depending on how narrow the source material is, and at least on the initial stages, it's all going to be narrow because it's not going to have access to everything. You're going to be getting biased or skewed, and people just need to realize that whenever they're using.
That's a very fair point. So, anyways, let's go on to this next article. I thought we might get some conversation out of. This is from Canary Media, and it's interesting. Says we're going to need a lot more electricians if we're going to electrify everything.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Chinoy Ruth, a 42-year-old product designer at a software company, Airtable, bought a house in Berkeley, California. Rich, because it's in California. With his partner at the end of 2020, the couple wasn't planning to buy, but when COVID hit, they began working from one-bedroom San Francisco apartment. They developed a new hobby, browsing listings on Zillow and Redfin. Blah, 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 blah. They eventually picked a house. So one of the things they wanted to do was install solar panels. They've got explanation about here, but they eventually decided. So they said they wanted solar panels on the house. Fine. Many of the electricians Rith reached out to didn't respond. Those who did were booked out for weeks, if not months. He said they were so busy that conversations felt like interviews, as if he was being evaluated. This sets out whether his house was worth their time. Quote, it felt like you were trying to get your kid into a nice kindergarten, where you have to be interviewed and do a lot of things just to get on the radar of these electricians, unquote, Rith told Grist. His first choice contracting company put him on a long wait list before it sent anyone out to look at the house. Another gave him an exorbitant quote, more than $50,000 to upgrade the electrical panel along with installing new grounded outlets to replace the house's outdated two-prong outlets. Rith wound up putting the project on hold to do renovations first. Andrew Campbell, executive director of University of California, Berkeley's Energy Institute, had a similar experience. Campbell wanted to upgrade the electrical panel on a duplex he owns in Oakland so that he could install electric vehicle chargers for the building's tenants. But even after finding a company to take the job, a shortage of technicians and the contractor's overbooked schedule, among other delays, means it took 8 months from the time the first electrician came out until the project was done. He said, quote, I was feeling like, why am I doing this? Campbell said, quote, the electricians who should want the project don't seem to want it. The utility, which is really going to benefit a lot from electrification, they're making it hard. There just felt like a barrier after barrier, unquote. You could read Ritz and Campbell's troubles as minor inconveniences, or you could read them as warning signs. To cut greenhouse gas emission at pace to best available science, United States must prepare, blah, 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 blah. The race to electrify everything is picking up. Joe Biden's signature legislation, Inflation Reduction Act, blah, 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 blah. It keeps going, but basically it talks about how, because everyone is pushing hardcore electrification of both cars, appliances, everything, that we don't have enough electricians to do the work. You know, it's taking years just to get basic electrical work done on houses now.
Remember the year 2000 computer problem?
Yeah.
We just switched that to climate change now.
Well,
if you think of it like that, it makes more sense.
Yeah. But they're basically showing that, yeah, Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that 21% of electricians will hit retirement age in the next 10 years. The agency estimates demand for electricians will grow by 7% over the same span, and that between retirement and new demand, there will be nearly 80,000 job openings in the field every year. That estimate doesn't account for all the incentives, rebates for solar panels, electric panels, heat pumps, stoves, cars, contained in the Inflation Reduction Act, nor does it account for the possibility that demand might soar if local governments keep pushing to electrify buildings. Several contractors and labor experts, when asked why electricians are so hard to find, pointed to the widespread belief that the main path to adulthood runs through four-year universities and the related decline of vocational education in high schools. According to Pew Research, 39% of millennials earned a bachelor degree or higher, compared to 29% of Gen Xers and 24-25% of the boomers. Even for those drawn to a career in the trades, there's another obstacle. The technical schools built to train them are short of money and people, too. So, yeah, it's hard to even get trained as an electrician if you wanted to go into the job.
And people are being pushed and have been pushed for generations, college rather than trades.
Yep. It's a long article. It goes on. I just wanted to get the gist of it out there and see what you guys thought because, I mean, yeah, and it's probably not just electricians, though. It's probably plumbers. It's probably all of the trades.
It's all the
carpentry.
Trades.
Yeah. I have an uncle who ran a business as a carpenter for a while. He had trouble finding anyone to work. And once you get them trained up, there's not a... you have to have a critical mass before you can go from... We're just doing remodels to we're building a whole house. And before he could get that mass, they figured the only way to get a pay raise, now that I know what I'm doing, is to branch off on my own, and I'm the handyman that my boss was, effectively.
Yeah. And the skill shortage is real. And it is going to bite. Hard to get people because there's a lot of work around at the moment and there's not a lot of workers. And it's not like you can go from unemployed to putting in light switches and shit like that. It doesn't work. It's a four-year process. Six if you want to be truly qualified for everything. It's not just electricians. It's line workers. It's substation workers. It's everything. Because go to uni. Go to universities.
Well, half of them there are studying gender studies and other useless
There you go. I don't know. By the time we hit critical mass of electricians, I don't think we'll have any electricity to run through those wires, to be honest. God.
Yeah, I don't have the apocalyptic view that... RU has, but I will say it is going to end up slowing growth.
Yeah, a lot.
You're not going to be able to build a factory if you can't get the infrastructure.
And you watch, they'll start blaming the slowing of growth, of national growth, on men not wanting to do these jobs after they've spent 20 years shitting all over the people that do these jobs.
You know, Madman, when you and I are in high school, I do remember hearing stuff from the guidance counselor saying, oh, you don't want to be a plumber or a garbage man, do you?
Yeah.
I remember hearing shit like that.
And plumbers, it might be a shit job because you are literally dealing with shit. But back when we were in high school, plumbers were making $30 an hour.
Yeah.
Now, I know people hearing that now, but when we were in high school,
that was good.
That was 20 years ago.
So they're
or
now
more.
Making $2.50 an hour, Madman.
Yeah. Right now, a master plumber or a master welder, anything once you throw the title master in front of it in the trades,
they're
making heart surgeon money.
Uh-huh. And they get to pick their clients.
Yeah. Like this guy said, you're not interviewing them for the job. They've got a job. They're interviewing you to see, am I going to have to wait 6 months after I'm done to get paid? Or am I going to get paid immediately? And then they pick which ones they want to service.
Even saying all that more, it's like, yeah, you got the trade, you got the skill, you're doing the job for the client, yet the client looks their nose down at you because they work at a bank or something. They treat you like shit.
That's just a shitty client.
Dude, they're all like that. Every one of them. Never met. Well, actually, I met a couple of good owners, but nah. They all look down on you.
Maybe it's just because so much of my family's in the trades. I've always respected because I've seen what what a skilled tradesman can do.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of it, you think, I can hang a door. And yes, I can hang a door. But for me to hang that door square and plumb, I bet it would take me 8 fucking hours.
Yeah.
And I see one dude walk up and do it in 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then he hands me this bill. And I'm like, why is it so much? He's like, because of the time it took me to figure out how to do that in 15 minutes. That's what you're paying for.
Exactly. But it goes two ways there. You know, the tradie gets shit all over by the dude wearing the suit. And I remember it. I went and started doing engineering and was going on sites wearing a suit, and man, the death stare. So I'm like, but I'm one of you guys. Are you?
No, you're wearing a suit now. You're a trader.
I'm a piece of shit.
You might be a tradie, but you're wearing an asshole's uniform.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're trying to have a conversation with you, like, yeah, and look, I was doing this for 20 years. So I'm just doing this now. They don't care. You're still in the wrong uniform to them.
So.
Yeah, go to trade school, kids.
Let's see here. We've got about 9 and a half.
Dojo time?
Huh?
Is it dojo time?
Well, what I have for dojo is probably not going to fill out that much time, but the next article I have is comedy. We'll do this next article because we can probably do it quick and there's not that much to actually discuss with it. Fifth of passwords used by federal agency cracked in security audit.
Imagine my shock.
More than a fifth of the passwords protecting network accounts in the U.S. Department of the Interior, including password 1234, password 1234 exclamation mark, and change it now exclamation mark, were weak enough to be cracked using standard methods, a recently published security audit of the agency found. The audit was performed on the Department's Inspector General, which obtained cryptographic hashes for 85,944 employee Active Directory accounts. Auditors then used... Okay, that's easy. If you have domain admin access, you just log into the box and you dump the hives. Okay, I've done this. I know what tool they're using. I've done this exact same thing at a previous company I worked at because I'm fairly certain the manager who gave me permission to do it didn't understand what it meant when I explained it to him until I showed him the results, in which case he panicked, picked up my computer, and walked into his office to format the hard drive. He did try to pick up the computer. He wasn't successful. He said he wanted to format the hard drive. So
the only way to be sure.
We did. I deleted all of that for him, but I just thought it was hilarious, his reaction, because it's like, I told you this is what I was going to do. Well, I didn't realize it was going to work. Okay. And I'm like, this.
Did
look
you
at
say
all these passwords that
if you did your job correctly, it wouldn't have?
Well, the thing is, I said, now, okay. Well, great. We've got all these people who need to pick stronger passwords. And he had the audacity to say, well, I don't think most hackers are as good as you, so we probably don't need to worry about it.
That's not a defense, Your Honor.
I've had that same manager use that for email problems, too, where it's like, look, I was able to break into the system in like 20 minutes. We need to do something about this. It's like, well, I don't think most people are going to have the same, you know, skill set you will. It's like, yes, they will. They'll probably be better. What are you talking about?
Look, they're most probably people, gonna be... no. The people you need to worry about, yes, because this is their job.
Yeah.
Their job is to get into your email server.
So, anyways, auditors then used a list of more than 1.5 billion words that included dictionaries from multiple languages, U.S. government terminology, pop culture references, publicly available password lists harvested from past data breaches across both public and private sectors, common keyboard patterns, e.k. QWERTY and QWERTY UOP. If you wonder what QWERTY and QWERTY UOP is, look at the first row of letters on your keyboard.
You know how you fix this? You announce that you're going to be doing a password audit, and anybody who has the password Pickle Rick will be fired immediately and escorted out of the fucking building. And just watch the one dude panic.
So they used a rainbow table, by the way.
Yeah.
So, anyways, results weren't encouraging, blah, 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 blah. The most commonly used passwords, followed by the number of users, were password dash 1234 478. Bronco, spelled with zeros instead of O's, dollar sign 2012, 384, or 389. Password 123, dollar sign 318. Password 1234, 274. Summer Sun 2020 exclamation mark with the 3 instead of an E for summer, 191. Orlando underscore 0000. Orlando spelled with a 0 instead of the first O, 160. Password 1234 exclamation mark, 150. Change it 123, 140. 1234 password dollar sign. Ooh, getting tricky there. 138. Change it now exclamation mark, 130. So, yeah, the setup we used consists of two rigs with 8 GPUs each, 16 total, and a management console. The rigs themselves run multiple open source. Oh, they didn't use Rainbow tables. They just computed them on the fly with GPUs. Run multiple open source containers, bring up 2, 4, 8 GPUs, assign the tasks from the open source works distribution console. Using GPU 2 and 3 generations behind currently available products, we achieved a pre-filled work NTLM combined benchmark of 240 gigahashes testing NTLM via 12 character masks and 25.6 gigahashes via 10 gig versus a 10 gigabyte dictionary and a 3 megabyte rules file. Actual speeds varied across multiple test configurations during the engagement. So, no, they did not keep a rainbow table. They just computed it on the fly with GPUs. Same concept, just smaller hard drive. So, yeah, extremely weak, easy to guess, easy to crack. Surprising nobody, but what are you going to do? Other than keep doing it and trying to explain to people why weak passwords are a bad idea. Or, you know, multi-factor on everything. Which is the correct answer. Kind of a pain in the ass, but it is a correct answer. Thoughts on that before we do Dojo?
Yeah, I'm good for that one.
I don't think multi-factors, once it's implemented, it's not that big an issue.
You don't have the same users I do then, Madman, because oh my god.
I don't want to use my phone. I'm not using my phone for business. What do you mean I got to punch in a code every 15 minutes? Oh my god.
Not every 15 minutes, it's when you log into the system.
Oh, some of these people log in and out every 15 minutes, so I don't understand why they do that, but they do. So, anyways, let's do this. Alright, what I have for us in Digital Dojo tonight is kind of fun, kind of silly. NASA has put out a collection of paper models of various satellites and spacecraft. As in, you can download the PDFs, print them out, cut them out, and glue them together and have a little paper model of a satellite, such as the Kepler, James Webb, Hubble, Fermi, Pioneer 10, Stardust, Voyager, Mars Express, Mars Odyssey, Galileo. So yeah, you can follow the links on this NASA page and find tons of little models if you want to print them out. So if you want the Galileo, you click the link there to the second group that had the Galileo. Click on the Galileo. You'll have two PDFs. One's instructions, one's parts. You download the parts. You print it out. You cut them out. You glue it together. Looks like most of them are going to be in black and white, so you might need to paint it if you want it to look, you know, have paint or something like that. Although a lot of these satellites are just kind of gray. So... But and then they got another PDF with how to put it together. It's meant for kids, but it's kind of fun. Also, I guess if you have a laser cutter, you could make some really cool ones out of, like, a metal. Or a plasma cutter, I guess, for metal. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, so essentially, your hard-earned tax dollars at work there.
That's true. That is all.
That one, I think they could probably just compile it out of a... other people doing this, because I remember these kits from growing up with some of this stuff.
Well, you used to have to buy them. You know, it was like you'd come in a book. But now you can just download them and print them out. So I just thought that was cool when I came across that. So there's a Dojo link. But, of course, that's all I got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, subreddit. In the IRC tonight, we had Al Hazard, Cyber Large, Psychros, Madman, myself, and Sardonyx. Madman, closing thoughts.
I kind of want a chatbot that'll run D&D when I ask it to, and do a good job.
Well, that second part might make it harder. Are you? Closing thoughts.
Clippy 2.0 is going to kill us all.
only after I try to strangle him because he's slippy. Prior to that, he might be a nice guy.
ChatGPT is going to take over those robot dogs. You do the little synthesized voice. Remember when you kicked me, Dave?
Now who has no testicles, Dave?
Oh, man. Where is it? Where is it?
The answer to that, still you. I've just joined you.
All right. That's all we got. Let's close it out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.